In summary, as we leave the two animations, we try to think of a sine wave as a still snapshot of a fixed-length vector that we know is rotating, but for purposes of simplifying the math, we view it as not in motion, or rather, we think of it as referenced by some arbitrary point throughout its waveform, usually zero. We call this a phasor diagram, but I won't dwell on that now beyond saying that it is a very useful tool that we will revisit in depth when I come back to AC circuits involving reactive elements, capacitors, and inductors. In addition to moving along to the next frame, in addition to generators producing sine waves, many things in nature produce sine waves. Resonant systems tend to oscillate, that is, vibrate at a natural rhythm. A pendulum is such a resonant system. A pendulum in a grandfather clock is repowered every swing as it goes through its oscillation back and forth. The escape wheel is putting little increments of push at just the right time to keep the thing going. But due to frictional losses, a pendulum unassisted by such external power tends to slow down. Well, the energy that it has tends to diminish, and you get a waveform that is a diminishing sine wave. This has some interesting characteristics. The sine wave that you get, the frequency remains constant even though the amplitude is diminishing. This is because a resonant system wants to oscillate at a certain rate. It doesn't want to change its natural rhythm even though its amplitude, that is the amount of swinging that the pendulum is doing in this instance, is diminishing in amplitude. I show two cycles where someone has started the pendulum swinging at wild oscillations that go clear off the paper that the pen is drawing the blue line on, strip chart style, and then it diminishes down to nothing, and then I show it once again started up again, wild oscillations, and it's kind of caught midpoint there at the particular image that you see. A generator like those shown in the animations above that was hooked up to a really large flywheel, and you spin this generator up so that it's running at a really good clip, is not the same kind of phenomenon as that flywheel slows down and eventually comes to a stop. The difference there is that, unlike a natural resonant system, in the case of the flywheel driving the generator, the frequency slows down because the generator's rotating through the magnetic fields isn't as fast anymore. So not all things are immediately obvious that they should be a standard decaying sine wave, such as I've drawn in the pendulum example. There are things that will slow down as a function of the frequency will diminish also. So that's just a different kind of phenomena. But I wanted to distinguish that so that to avoid accidentally confusing you. Moving right along, the next picture I show the 110 volt voltage coming out of your wall socket. It isn't 120 or 110 or whatever they tell you. They lie a lot. It actually has a peak value of 170 volts positive and 170 volts negative. Now, it's not exactly 170. It's, if you started out with exactly 120 volt AC, RMS, sinusoid coming out of your wall socket, which is what the 120 volts represents, the voltage that you would actually be able to measure, the plus and minus peaks would be something like 169.7 something, and it's this sort of irrational number that just goes out over and over. Well, what is all of this? Well, why do they call it 120 volts? If you look at the waveform, and then I have another waveform that I draw, that shows what happens if you rectify the output of the generator. That's the one where the two humps are facing up, instead of the, basically the bottom one that goes from 180 degrees to 360 degrees on the left has been flipped so that it shows them both positive. And that's what would happen, by the way, if you ran the generator's output into a diode bridge. The result would always be positive, but it wouldn't be like a battery. It would still be fluctuating DC. In this case, it fluctuates all the way down to zero and all the way up to 170 volts, assuming that the diodes don't have any drop. They're ideal, perfect diodes, better than anything in the real world. Okay. Well, if you were to connect a light bulb, and a light bulb is just a special example of a resistor, as I've mentioned before. If you were to connect a light bulb to this now rectified AC source, full-wave rectified AC source, if you were to connect a light bulb to that, and you were conversely to connect it to a 120 volt DC source, the two light bulbs would light of equal brilliance. This is because you have an AC sine wave that goes as high as 170 volts. And by the way, the bulb would light as brightly if it were connected to the AC sine wave as well. I will get a little bit more into what the diode bridge really does a little later, but a resistance, or a light bulb for that matter, doesn't see polarity as important. It doesn't matter which direction the electrons run through the wire and the filament of the light bulb, it will glow just as brightly either direction. There, in fact, there's really, short of as if you were to put a magnet inside the bulb or something, you would be able to detect nothing unusual. The electrons flowing through would light the bulb at the same brilliance. So, you know, the diodes give me an excuse to draw you a waveform that is all positive. And I can stack it right beside another waveform that's all positive, namely the battery. And the battery just sits at 120 volts throughout the entire 360-degree circle. It doesn't care. It doesn't. There's nothing changing on the battery. It starts at 120 volts. It proceeds throughout the duration at 120 volts. And when it winds up at 360 degrees, it's still 120 volts. It's unchanging. Where the voltage that's powering the light bulb that's being driven from the diode bridge starts at zero, comes up to 170, goes back down to zero again, comes back up to 170, and back down to zero. Well, part of the time, there's no voltage at all powering that lamp. It doesn't have any voltage on it whenever you go down to 0 volts. And so, in order for the AC power source to be as effective in lighting the bulb, in order for it to match the brilliance of the bulb that's lit on the DC source, the bulb on the AC source, excuse me, the bulb on the AC source has to be has to have a higher voltage in order for it to light as brightly. Well, okay, that's all well and good. But why 120 volts? Why 170 volts peak? There is, of course, something magic about that ratio. But what it boils down to is, if you look at the next picture, it is power, after all, that lights the bulb. And we're going to make the assumption that in both cases, the resistance of the bulb is the same. It doesn't change. And the bulbs are identical if there are two bulbs. The point is that the two bulbs, being identical resistance, their resistance falls out of the equation. It is no longer important to consider the resistance of either bulb, so then we can just consider what power would be given some unknown but constant resistance. Well, the formula, if you go back to your pie chart, a lesson or so back, you probably notice that there is a formula for power that says that voltage squared divided by the resistance, which in this case is constant, it falls out of the equation, voltage squared gives you power. Well, in this case, I only have to refer to voltage squared, and if you look at the sine wave that I have started out with, the 120 volt thing that we refer to, the RMS value of the sine wave, not its peak value, and we multiply that times the square root of 2, and then we square that quantity, we end up with 28,800, which is the peak E squared voltage, the peak power voltage that results. And if we do the same thing to 120 volts DC, if we square that one, we end up with 14,400. Now, remember that this is a voltage squared waveform. If you were then to trace out the sine wave squared number, you would start at 0 degrees. This is on the left-hand side now. You would start out at 0 degrees. You would reach a zenith at the peak of that sine wave, which is 170, and since this is voltage squared, it's 170 squared, or 28,800. And then you, at 90 degrees, you would start down the curve toward the 180 degree mark, where your amplitude is zero. And if you look at, in zero squared is, of course, zero. And so if you look on the squared side, the upper right-hand curve, you see that it has gone down to, at the 180 degree point, it is back to zero again. And then, as you proceed in the negative direction toward a maximum at 270 degrees, where you're back up to 170 negative 170 volts at this point, well, it turns out that whenever you square a negative number, you get a positive number. And so what we do is, as we go for that leg of the trip, we go from 180 degrees back up to where we're sitting at zero. We go back up to 28,800 again, because two negative numbers multiplied by each other is a positive number. And then once we reach 270 degrees back toward 360 degrees, we start back down toward zero again. Now that describes the sine square, the voltage squared, and of course the voltage squared is following a sine function, the sine function on the left. If you look at the if you look carefully at that waveform that's in the sine squared, it has an interesting property. If you start out at about 45 degrees, each one of these marks is a 15 degree interval, so you've got you have to count over three marks in order to find the point where 45 degrees is. And if you go straight up from there, and if you start at that amplitude, if you start at that purpose or that point, or you were to simply draw a line straight through the center of the sine or the center of that waveform at that point, throughout, and you continued the line over horizontally to 225 degrees, which is three ticks past 180 degrees, you would, if you look carefully at that waveform, you'd notice that it is a sine wave. It matches the shape of the wave on the right-hand side, or the left-hand side. Okay, so that tells you that there is something kind of magical. In fact, there is actually a rule that says that you can double the frequency, which if you look at there are actually two complete sine waves in there, although part of one is sort of shifted around to the other side, if you want to look at it that way. You double the frequency and the amplitude of that, is it, and then you raise the sine wave above the zero line so that the trough of the negative peak just touches the zero line, and the peak of the one just touches the voltage squared. Okay, there's actually a rule for this, but I did want to point out the fact that they are like that. Well, okay, you'll notice that the shaded portion, the bottom half of that waveform, is exactly the same amount of area as the white portion or the unshaded portion. And if you look at that and you say, well, okay, so we have half of it shaded, exactly half of it shaded, the shaded area of the DC equivalent wave, now this is a power wave, not a voltage wave, we squared 120 volts, so we started out at 14,400, 120 squared, and we continued over from 0 to 360 degrees, like we did in the DC wave above, only this is a DC power wave. And what this shows you is that you have the same amount of power, the same area under the curve. They are exactly matched. So this is a power waveform, and you get that, and that tells you how much energy is going to be, or how much heat, or how much light, or whatever is going to be in the bulb. And since the amount of energy that's in the AC sine wave voltage squared versus the DC representation also voltage squared, since the two of them match, then you end up with bulbs of equal brilliance. Well, the overall thing of this that I'm trying to demonstrate is that with a sine wave, now this is exclusively for a sine wave, there is a relationship between the voltage that you need to produce an equivalent amount of power in a resistive load. And that turns out to be, there's a little equation up in the upper right hand or upper left hand corner of the of this picture that basically is saying that the peak voltage, 170 in this case, times the square root of 1/2 equals 120 volts RMS. In other words, that is how you convert. You use a coefficient. The square root of 1/2 is 0.7071 something or other. I only memorized it to four digits and never really needed any more accuracy than that. For, I mean, you stick a you stick a scope on a wall socket, and the voltage varies quite a bit anyway. So it's more than four places of accuracy. I mean, there's more variation just in the stuff coming out of your wall socket than there is there. But you can look at a sine wave, measure its peaks, and if you know that it's a sine wave, and this is important, and it has to be a balanced sine wave, there can be no DC component in it. That is, the reference line, the zero line, has to be right in the middle of the sine wave. If it's off to one side or the other, then you cannot use the RMS conversion equivalent that, you know, all the engineering courses teach you to use. So I hope that this has made sense to you, and I'm probably not going to cover this in much depth beyond what I've explained here, so I hope you got it, and on to the next one.